characteristics that I've discovered about myself along the way as we look at this little deal is, number one, I'm incapable of following instructions, and number two, even if the instructions are given to me very clearly, I have a tendency to get them out of order. You know, the steps are laid out very simply. Am I really an alcoholic? Am I really? Can I manage my life? I mean, it really comes down to some pretty basic questions. But as an alcoholic, what I have a tendency to do is to skip over those and run quickly down the steps to number 9 and think, I can't do that. Let me give you a classic example of how my mind works. About 3 years ago, in an attempt to complete a bachelor's degree, I had to do a research project. And I called it, and I ended up, I didn't get the project done in time, and it was a university back in Kansas, and I ended up out in Massachusetts, and so I called a school back in Kansas. I said, is there any way I can do this long distance? Because I'll finish up if I can get this done. They said, sure. But they said, from when you first were given this assignment until now, the instructions have changed, so we'll send you a new set of instructions on how to do this project. I said, that'd be fine. So a few days later in the mail, I got about an inch and a half thick manual on how to do this research project. Now, I'm an alcoholic, and let me tell you what I did. There were 9 parts to this project, and each part had a chapter devoted to it. So I opened up that instruction manual to chapter 9. Which was the concluding chapter, and my first thought was, I can't do this. My wife would ask me from time to time, because she knew what I was involved in, she'd say, well, honey, how are you coming on the project? And I'd say, I'm working on it. What I was doing was looking at chapter 9 saying, I can't do this. And one morning, during some quiet time, the thought came to me, why don't you look at the instructions for chapter 1? It's a novel idea, so I did. I'm serious. My spiritual awakenings have been very simple little things like that. Why don't you look at the instructions for chapter 1? You know what the instructions for the first chapter were? They were very simple. Think of what it is you're going to research. Give that a title. And make a cover sheet for your project. That was the sum and substance of the instructions for part 1. Oh, just make a cover sheet. Just give it a title. What are you going to do? Make a title out of that. And that's number chapter 1. Well, I did it. Didn't take me about an hour. Bam, I got chapter 1 done. Chapter 2 followed chapter 1 pretty easily. And each one built on the preceding one. And these little steps have worked, this little process, this little path of ours has worked the same way. Am I really an alcoholic? Yeah. And I do lack the power to solve any of my own problems. And I discovered over time, because my disease progressed to the point of, I understand what they mean when they say it's a fatal malady. You know, I was going to die without ever getting to drink again. That's brutal, too, by the way. Psychic pain is very intense. Alcoholic insanity can sometimes look like this. Do you go on red at the stoplight, or is it green that you go on? I can't remember. You ever walk down a grocery store aisle and think, wait a minute, what did I come here for? See, alcoholic insanity, because your mind has just spun and spun and spun for years and years and years. Terrible fear. So am I alcoholic insane? Do I have a tendency to take things out of perspective or out of proportion? I've been known to do that. I just wanted her to... I just thought she would... Hear that little word, just... But when she doesn't just do that, it gets big. So I get down to that little part of the book where it says we made clear three very pertinent ideas. We were alcoholics. Lives are unmanageable. No human power could solve my problem. See, have you ever tried? I tried all the human power there is to use. I've had a lot of money in my pocket before, and you know what? I was still restless, irritable, and discontent. I lived on that little edgy spot. I was always on the move. Always moving. No human power could relieve my alcoholism. God could and would if he were sought. How do you do that? I thought, well, I got a set of instructions here in front of me. And I used to have to call my sponsor and say, okay, what do I do next? He'd say, what's in front of you? Okay. All right, that's what I'll do. Yeah, I'm one who very... That's why I have a difficult time. I can't criticize anybody or any group on how they do this, because you all put up with me for 13 years. And I literally mean that. You put up with me for 13 years, during which time I was not a shining star of sobriety. I was not a poster kid for you all. You all allowed me to stay here until... I finally was able to hear this and said, okay, I'm going to try this. But those ideas were very clear in my own mind. I truly was powerless, completely. I was truly an alcoholic. And I still know that today. As we go through this book today, I've been asking myself some of these same questions again. Just one more time, just to double check. Do I drink even against my will, or did I? Yeah, I did. Once I started, could I stop? Nope. Do I believe in a power greater than me? Yep. God everything, or he's either everything or nothing. What's it going to be, Slick? I don't have anything to lose. Now, I don't know where you guys have got to, but I know where I got to. I have nothing to lose by saying, well, I'm gonna choose that God is everything. Literally everything. And then I'm going to go on from there. And since I don't know how to go on, I'm going to ask somebody who's done it ahead of me, what do I do now? And let them tell me. That's basically what this is about. That's what it's all about.
I loved Chuck Chamberlain. It made me crazy. He said one time, what you're looking for, you're looking with. But I understand that today. What you're looking for, you're looking with. Deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. We know what it's going to take. Now we need to know where to look for it. And I need somebody to tell me that, because I've been looking out here forever. Lack of power, that's my dilemma. And I've been looking out here for power and finding it. There is power in money. There's power in prestige. There's power in sex. There's power in all kinds of things out here. I found power in a 49 Mercury convertible one time. Maroon with leopard skin seat cover. It had the power to put two blondes in the back seat. They broke the top the second day, and I didn't want them or the car anymore. Lack of power is my dilemma. I have to find a power greater than myself, and where am I going to look for that? Well, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Very frightening thought for a person who, just prior to his death, had done the most thorough inventory I'd ever done in my life. And I say it was thorough because when I was finished with it, it was clear to me that I was completely useless and there was no reason for me to stay on this planet, that everybody on the planet would be better off if I weren't here, including my children. And that was the truth. And now I come to you and you say, that's where we're going. We're going to look deep within and find out what's cooking. Pretty scary proposition. It may be obscured by calamity. Well, let's get honest. Your calamity is sometimes my entertainment. How much money did Titanic just make? It's all a matter of viewpoint. Okay. By pomp. I didn't understand that till I turned the mirror around and saw the pompous ass. I mean, I understand pomp. Okay. And it will obscure things. By worship of other things, I have worshipped anything that gives me power, I worship. Whatever you are worshiping is your God. I don't have any problem, and they made it clear to me, believing in God. Whatever I worship is my God. Whatever I worship is whatever is giving me power. Whether that be money or prestige or ownership or whatever it may be. But in some form or other, it's already there. Okay? We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup just as much as the feeling we had for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep within. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. And that's where I found it. As the result of some careful and loving guidance, I've told you my sponsor was hard-nosed. He told me the cold, hard truth and didn't give a damn whether I liked it or not. Truth without love is cruelty. And confrontation without a real answer is brutality. But he loved me and he had a real answer, so he never pussyfooted. Okay? He destroyed all my concepts of God one afternoon. I've already told you about that. He said he'd been changed and that God had changed him, and I truly didn't care who had changed him. It didn't matter to me. He'd been changed, that's all. I believed in whatever power there was to do that. Said my first third step with every ounce of belief I had. Waited for my flash of light. And when it didn't come, it pissed me off. It frightened me. I had done what they said and nothing happened. Because I really expected something to go boom. And my cell door would spring open. And the guard would holler out, "Okay, Pritch, you can go home. We don't need you anymore." Or something equally as dramatic. And absolutely nothing happened. Nothing. I can handle any kind of crisis you want to throw at me. I can't handle nothing happening. Okay. And I went back to him and really agitated. "Where's mine?" I told him, "No flashlight, nothing happened." He says, "Well, you dummy, you ought to be grateful you didn't have a flashlight. They've nearly killed you all your life." And we talked about flashes of light. Southern Comfort on a roof in Phoenix, Arizona in September will give you a flashlight. Did me. Drink enough peyote tea and you will wake up. And on and on. And they've nearly killed me all my life. He said, "Don, God knows that in your present state you probably can't stand one more big shock anyway. And will probably come to you as he did to me, very gently and over a period of time. But gently was the key." I was a deeply wounded animal. And most of us come here deeply wounded animals. We need to be gentle with one another. Straight up and truthful, but gentle. Okay? I abhor it when people call each other dickheads, fools, dummies, out of just power tripping. But I don't mind being called a dummy when it's a step up from 38,984. He gave me back my name. And he pursued it with an answer. I asked him, how do I make this real? I don't want any more la-la land stuff. He said, God will reveal himself to you as you reveal yourself to you. That was the deal. But before that, we had to clear away some prejudice. I've got one of those incredible egos that even from death had rebuilt itself in a matter of months to where I still had a reservation. God! He went for my reservation. I believed that at that time that if I truly surrendered entirely to God that he had work for me to do. And that was not good news. Because I knew what it was. And I didn't want to do it. I really believed at that time if I surrendered, I would end up on the corner of Colfax and Broadway in Denver, handing out Watchtower magazines and asking strangers, have you been saved, brother? See, I'd seen this guy doing that. Old fellow in a brown suit, brown shoes, and a brown hat, making a fool of himself, and we used to make fun of him. And I just couldn't see me doing that. And I said that to him. He said, all right, well, let's talk about that. He blindsided me. If you're new, that doesn't mean let us talk about that. It means be quiet for a minute, because I'm going to get you. He said, Don, do you suppose that the guy that's handing out watchtowers today had breakfast where he wanted to? And I said, probably. And he said, well, you didn't. Do you suppose, Don, that that guy that's making a fool of himself asking strangers if they've been saved is wearing clothes that he picked out to do it in? And I said, probably. And he said, well, you're not. Do you suppose when he's all through humiliating himself on that corner that he gets to go home? And he had me because I didn't. Now, that would be cruel if there weren't some kind of answer. But he leveled me to a place that I needed to be leveled to. We're promised a new mind, and he carried me into my new mind and laid the foundation for me. And it's simply this. My entire life is this. The rest of it's fluff. Anything at all that God may have in mind for me is better than anything at all that I will ever have in mind for me. Period. And I do live that way. And I'm imperfect at it. And I'm willful sometimes. And I shriek and call him a bully. But it doesn't matter. I do it anyway. Whatever he has in mind for me is better than whatever I have in mind for me. And everything follows from that. And all that is a third step prayer in different words. But I've still got an ego. And after I got to that place, I went back and told him, okay, I'm ready now. I'll even hand out watchtowers at Colfax and Broadway. And he laughed at me. He said, hey, he's already got a guy down there doing that. Probably got something else in mind for you. He said, that's all very noble, but yeah. What he has in mind for me is a daily deal. The tasks I'm asked to do not put me in the history books. I would rather they did, but they don't. And that's interesting because I have been privileged to participate in history-making events in this fellowship. But my name isn't part of them. Thank God. But also, thank God I got to be there when it happened. But it's a daily deal. You know who one of my heroes is? You want to be a hero? My next door neighbor. Demonstrates what it means to be a real hero. Year after year after year, he has kept his lawn cut and looking good. He chops the ice from the gutter in front of the house in the winter so nobody gets hurt. He goes to work every day and takes care of his family. He watches my house for me when I'm gone and asks me to watch his when he's gone. He shows up on a regular basis. He's a member of our community. He had the nerve to chew me out one time because I was not being a good neighbor. He did it very gently, very gentlemanly, but thoroughly. Okay. My dog barked all the damn time. And he let me know that that was not a gentle, a neighborly thing to do, is to have that dog out there barking all the time. He's right. He was forthright. He's heroic. He's getting older. In fact, he was on a, using a cane the other day. But he still goes to work every day because he isn't through yet. And his family needs things. So each day it will be revealed to me what I'm to be. No great mountaintop experiences that I can see 20 years ahead. Each day it will be revealed to me what I can be. I got one of the nicest compliments I've ever had in my life a while back from my boss. He talked to my former boss, and my former boss said, "What's he doing for you?" And my current boss said, "I'm really not sure, but he's doing a lot of it." And my former boss said, "Yeah, that's about the position I was in for 2 years, too." And about a week later, he came to me and said, "I finally figured it out. It isn't what you do, it's who you are." That's what this is about. Because I don't do things very well. I'm not a task-oriented person. You got to give a damn about minutia, like paperwork. Well, I've already tested that. Nobody reads it anyway. I had a high-level report that had to be done every month one time for the Department of Corrections in North Carolina. And I just never quite got around to it. And then I noticed that nobody was complaining about it. So I thought I'd test it. Don't tell Tom this. I turned it into a quarterly report instead, just to see. And nobody ever complained about it, ever. It's obvious to me nobody ever read it. I was tempted to start writing poetry, but... And that's the deal. If God is everything or nothing, and I choose to believe, and I choose God is everything, I don't know what that means. It will be revealed to me as I clear away my prejudice and my preconceived ideas, and that's what inventory is all about, for me to clear away the stuff that keeps me from being who I am. And I'm still wanting to hand out Watchtower magazines. But he's still got other guys doing that. He's got other work for me to do, and he's got work for you to do. We're told what our work is, by the way. We're too dumb to even figure it out. We have to be told. Go find another alcoholic and do with them what was done with you. And that's all you got to do. It tells me in here precisely who is not going to recover. People who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program cannot or will not recover. They may stay sober, but they will still suffer from the symptoms of alcoholism. Restless, irritable, discontent, self-centered, self-seeking, unhappy, having trouble with personal relationships, unable to make a living. All through the book it's described what our state of mind will be if we haven't recovered. And I believe in being recovered. From any illness, recovery is a terribly difficult time from any illness. To stay in recovery forever hurts. And you can only recover just so much anyway, then you got to get about the business of living. Okay? And you may drink in recovery. You may. I see a lot of people drink in recovery. Do you? They just stay in recovery and they drink because recovery is too tough. Jesus, it's tough. My young brother-in-law was in an automobile accident that took out part of his mind and stuff that controls his body. And after 8 or 9 months in a coma, he began to come back to us. Sounds like some of the people I work with. Yeah. For years, He was in physical recovery trying to learn how to walk again. And it was a struggle, and it was tough. And it was tough on everybody around him as he began to get from the wheelchair up to the parallel bars and to try to eat and to articulate those first few years or first few words, from grunting to being able to say yes so we could understand what he meant. In that period, it was tough on everybody. Well, he's recovered as much as he's ever going to recover now. There's nowhere else to go. He still has difficulty, but he is recovered and he's very happy. He knows he's gone as far as he can go. He doesn't have to do those exercises anymore to recover. He does them now to stay well, to stay fit. Okay. Same thing here. I do certain exercises so I can get spiritually fit. I got to keep doing them to stay spiritually fit. Same exercises. Anyway,
I don't know why he looked at me when he talked about, you know, sounds like people he worked with. Oh, now we can get to some drama, can't we? One of the things, again, I've told you that I really truly brought a mind in here that didn't work right, only I didn't know it. See, there's a line that comes up about this place in the book. It says, many of us try to hold on to our old ideas, but the result was nil until we let go absolutely. I'm supposed to have a high IQ. Somebody measured it one time and said it was. But I could not figure out that old ideas and old thinking were one and the same thing. All the thinking that I came in here with, I kept for the next 13 years. Many of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. I didn't realize that just my old thinking was the same as my old idea. I don't know what I was thinking. I'll be quite honest, I really truly don't know what I was thinking. But the long and short of it was, my idea was that if I wasn't drinking, I was sober. And if I wasn't drinking, I was recovered. And if I wasn't drinking, I was sane. It completely escaped me that I was alcoholically insane, and that's why I drank. There was something wrong with the way my mind worked, and I drank for relief from that. I hadn't figured that out. And so you take away the booze, and hell, the insanity's still there. One of the things that scared me most about going through the steps, I'll be quite candid with you, was I knew I was going to owe more amends for my years in sobriety than I did when I was drinking. I was fairly harmless when I drank. I would stay home and I'd sit in one spot and I'd drink. When you're sober and you're not drinking, you're out moving around causing all this harm. Plus, I can remember it. And there's another little part of this part of the deal. It says, if you want what we have, then perhaps you're ready to take certain steps. That's the way I read that. I didn't know what it says. It said, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, then perhaps you're ready to take a few certain steps. No, I just want what you have, but I don't want to go to any length. See, that's my nature. Is if I can find somebody that I can... There's a word that we use out in my part of the country called sidling up. You sidle up against somebody and steal a little of their spirit. You sidle up against them and get them to make you feel good. See, I've been doing that my whole life. That's referred to, in a way I think today, as spiritual thievery. I'm just basically a little spiritual thief. I'll take what I can of your spirit so I don't have to do anything, but just so I'll feel better. That's what I do. So this really says is if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length, and you're and I couldn't get ready to go to any length until I finally discovered that life was intolerable living it the way I'd been living it. And so I had nothing to lose here. And this was, like I say, 13 years sober. I had nothing else to lose. So was I willing to go to any length? You bet. I didn't like the idea of going to Mexico. Don has his 15th, and I mean Colfax and Broadway, handing out watchtowers for me. It's that little... See, there was another part to that Mexico thing I didn't tell you about, and that other part was I was going to have to go down there alone. I was never going to be with her again. But I got willing. I became willing to do that. I became totally willing. And I had to, just a little like the Watchtower magazine. Doesn't that sound noble? And I was willing to be noble. Fortunately, I didn't have to go be noble. I just had to be an alky up here in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. But I was willing to go to any length. But like I say, I didn't know that my old thinking that I brought in here needed to be let go of. I didn't know that. I thought my thinking was just fine. I really truly did. But when my thinking didn't do any good, and that was 13 years away from a drink, when my thinking was no longer working right, I knew that I had to find some other solution. And so, when it says down here at the very bottom, remember we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it's too much for us. See, I can't change the way I think. I can't have that huge emotional displacement in my thinking on my power. I just can't do it. And that's where it says in there, without help, it's too much for us. And I've known that. And that's part of the giving up process. See, this whole thing up until this point in time, for me, is talking about a surrender process. Can you do this on your own? I can't. Can you get by living on your power? No, I can't. Can you change yourself, Jerry? No, I can't. And there's something wrong. I don't even know what a good idea is. 13 years sober, I thought, what am I supposed to be thinking? My ideas don't work. What will work? I don't know. My ideas don't work. That's all I knew. So I had to go with what I had, and that was what I am doesn't work. So let's go from there. Like I say, the idea, the concept that I am going to truly turn my life and my will over the care of God, see, because I still had some strange conceptions of God. Terribly strange conceptions of God. I wasn't very clear on this part yet. And that's when I came to that little part of the prayer. It says, we ask God's care with complete protection. We abandon ourselves to God's care. And we get ready to commence our way down through the steps. We don't need to read the steps here this afternoon. You all are familiar with the steps. But this is a good time, and it's always a good time for me to stop at one more point and ask myself, am I really alcoholic? We touched on this a few minutes ago. Am I really alcoholic? Am I beyond human aid? Let me ask you a little question. It's one that I ask myself often in a meeting like this. Would I feel any better or worse if I had a Mercedes sitting out in a parking lot? No. I wouldn't. Would I feel any better or worse if I had $1 million in the bank? No. Really wouldn't. So human power, things human, things in general aren't going to change anything for me. So I want to do this little deal? That's kind of where it's coming down to. Although there's a little tricky part the way this is laid out. It lays out the third step prayer, and then after the third step prayer, it says we thought well before taking this step. But by the time you get to that thinking well, you've already taken the step. But I don't want to get too serious here this afternoon. We're getting ready to take a little bit of a break for y'all. I'm always reminded, and this kind of describes me many years ago and for quite a number of years into sobriety. Alkies like me, have all sorts of problems. I mean, we just got problems just piled up higher than this building. And we come into AA, and it says, listen, it's like, if you'll turn your life and your will over to the care of God as you understand Him, listen, those problems will go away, and you won't ever have to worry about anything ever again. You won't have to worry about money. You won't have to worry about security. You won't have to live with fear. I mean, man, you can just, that's all you got to do. Just turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him. What are you going to do? And my answer is, I'm going to have to think about this a little bit. And isn't that what we do? Isn't that what we do? Yeah, I want to think. I mean, I've done such a poor job of running my life, but I still want to think about it a little bit. I mean, if you have any doubts about insanity, look at that. Look at that. You know, I'm doing the very best I can, 35 years old. And I came from a great family, by the way. I came from a real super little family. And at 35 years old, my choices looked like being locked away in a highly secure mental institution for the rest of my life. And really, that was with me making the best choices at every step of the way that I could possibly make. The best choices I could make. I had done the very best I could do. Never one time did I give it a second-rate effort. And that was the result. And the clarity of the fact that I don't think right was so right. In fact, it was so close I couldn't see it. So close I couldn't see it. But when I finally did see it, I thought, hell, I don't have anything to lose here. Got absolutely nothing to lose. And so with that little thought, I was able to finally say, okay. Don mentioned Chuck C. Old Chuck C said something one time, and I couldn't understand what it was he said. He said, you know, I've had to let go of every idea that I've ever had until I got here, except the multiplication tables. He said, I've been able to keep those. And I thought, how could you let go of all? I mean, surely there's got to be some value to your thinking up to this point. Here, many years later, after seeing that for the very first time, I realized he was absolutely correct. There is nothing, I brought nothing of value, as far as the way I thought, to this little deal. When I came in here in 1977, all my thinking I've had to be willing to let go of all of it, every bit of it, all my old ideas. I thought you had to get certain things to be happy. If you can get certain things, you'd be all right. That's just one of them. I could talk all afternoon about that. What do you want to do on break time?
Well, we have just expended a great deal of time and energy to get you really depressed, really tired. It's time now to say the third step prayer. I'm going to say the third step prayer. If you would like to join me, please do. Well, that was nice. That's been my general experience. It's always nice. Once we had somebody fall out and have a convulsion, but I think they'd have done that anyway. Blood sugar problem. It is time for a break. We would like to spend the rest of what time we have with you just showing you, not technically how we do inventory, but how we do inventory. And some of the things that I personally believe that the section between the third and the fourth column is far more important than any of the writing. And I'll go into why I believe that. It's 20 minutes to 4. There's going to be a speaker meeting at 7. I'm inclined, based on what you want, to call this until tomorrow morning, until the speaker meeting, and then get right on off into the balance of it. We will do whatever you wish. We are now unified and we have surrendered, and everything we do from here on is part of the house cleaning process. We're at your disposal. I was exhausted 2 minutes ago, and I'm fine right now. Okay. And if you don't keep us here, I'm going to go take a nap. I've already done my inventory. I did on the plane coming here. oh, yeah. Otherwise, we'd have had a different get-together. What's your pleasure? I think it's time for a break. Okay? Go do whatever you're going to do. We'll see you back here. We have a surprise speaker at 7 o'clock. I have no idea who it is. It's just going to be incredible. And we've got donuts to eat. See you at 7.